The Office of the Law. The law came in besides, that the trespass might abound. Romans 5:20, American Standard Version. The law came in that sin might show itself as sin, not to God, for he knew of its existence, but to man, who was ignorant. The law, therefore, reveals man's sin to himself, then it condemns and curses him. This is the office of the law. This is its purpose. It shuts up all of us under sin. Galatians 3:23. It proceeds upon principles of absolute justice, no sentiment, no mercy, no love. It fulfills its ministration, death. Furthermore, by the law is the knowledge of sin. Romans 3:20. We do not know what is sin until we hear the voice of the law, "Thou shalt not." It demands righteousness from man, defines transgression, imposes penalty, and demands execution of the same for disobedience. Thus it makes ready for the gospel of grace, in the which gospel the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear it shall live. John 5:25. God can reveal the rich provision that he has made for man's salvation only in proportion as he is conscious of his need. This is the reason that he gave the law again to Israel after their failure. But this time it is in the mingled manner, neither pure grace nor pure law. This was the covenant under which the people entered the land of Canaan. This mingling of law and grace was typified in Abraham's home. Sarah and Isaac stand for grace and its fruit. Hagar and Ishmael stand for the law and its fruits. Hence, believers under the covenant of law were called children, not sons, and saints today who are under law are also called children. Galatians 4:3, 19, and 22-31. Do you marvel then that the living, omniscient God did not give the law to man with the expectation of his keeping it, neither for the purpose of bringing forth any righteousness, holiness, or goodness from man? For it had just the opposite effect. It brought out man's utter badness. This is its righteous verdict on the whole old creation: helpless, ungodly, sinners, and enemies. Romans 5:6, 8, and 10. God must strip man of every merit, leaving him naked and helpless before he can display his grace. It is not a comparing of one man with another, not that one is a little better or worse than the other, but all are leveled to the one measure, guilty before God, absolutely shut up to judgment, no difference between man and man. All are lost sinners, a great mass of undone and ruined humanity without any merit whatever to recommend them to the favor of God. He had to give the law. That was its purpose, to shut up to the bar of divine justice a condemned, guilty sinner without one ray of light or hope except in the mercy of Jehovah. He was obliged to do this in order to display his grace. It needs such a background to set it off. For if man had any merit, God's grace would be mingled with works, and that would not be grace. And if by grace, then it is no more of works, otherwise grace is no more grace. But if it be of works, then it is no more grace, otherwise work is no more work. Romans 11:6. That is, the apostle insists it is not a mixture of the two. We must settle this fact and choose whether we will try to save ourselves by our own works or let God save us by his grace. And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses said unto the people, "Ye have sinned a great sin, and now I will go up unto the Lord. Peradventure I shall make an atonement for your sin." Exodus 32:30. Moses' offer here to make atonement was not accepted. That was impossible. Although the devotion which prompted it was recognized and no doubt rewarded, it was the Spirit of Christ in Moses which caused him to identify himself with Israel in their sin. The same Spirit breathes through the prophets. Our own Apostle Paul was constrained by the same Spirit of sacrifice for the Lord's people when he cried, "For I could wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen, according to the flesh." Romans 9:3. But Christ alone could make atonement, for he only, of all men, had no penalty attached to his life. God was looking to the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, Revelation 13:8. Else he could never have overlooked his broken law and continued with this sinful nation. And the Lord said unto Moses, Hew thee two tables of stone like unto the first, and I will write upon these tables the words that were in the first tables, which thou breakest. Exodus 34:1. The tables of the law are renewed, and the commingling of grace and law is fully seen in this newly made covenant. But notice that before the Lord can ever manifest any grace whatever, he must judge their sin. This he does by refusing to take his place in their midst. Had he done so, they would have been consumed by his holiness. They are commanded to put off their ornaments and await his judgment in a repentant attitude. As a further sign of their condemnation, Moses removed the tent from the midst of the camp, which was the ordained place for the worship of the Lord, and pitched it outside afar off, and called it the tent of meeting. Exodus 33:7, Revised Version. All that sought the Lord had to go out to that tent. There the Lord spoke face to face with Moses. All the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent. It was there that Moses was especially seen as the type of the far greater prophet whom he represented, Christ the Son, in perfect communion with his Father. All depended upon the mediator. He bridged the gulf which sin had made. Moses entered fully into the mind of God and took the place of grace which was offered him. But even that was not yet the full grace which the gospel reveals. For to Moses, who desired to behold his glory, the Lord could only answer in a qualified manner. And he said, I will make all my goodness pass before thee, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before thee, and will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. And he said, Thou canst not see my face, for there shall no man see me and live. And the Lord said, Behold, there is a place by me, and thou shalt stand upon a rock. And it shall come to pass, while my glory passeth by, that I will put thee in a clift of the rock, and will cover thee with my hand while I pass by. And I will take away mine hand, and thou shalt see my back parts, but my face shall not be seen. Exodus 33, verses 19 through 23. Moses could but see the back parts of God's glory. He had to be covered with the divine hand while the Lord passed by. This was most significant. God's grace, in which is revealed his greatest glory, could not be seen by Moses as representative of law, even though the law was mingled with grace. Therefore, God is not known in any deep measure by believers who are under law. His face cannot be seen. The mercy declared to Moses was only the back parts of his glory. He forgave iniquity and transgression and sin. He even went on in some measure with those sinners who merited death. That was grace. But he will by no means clear the guilty. That is law. There is no justification of the ungodly under the law. No good tidings of great joy which shall be to all people. Luke 2:10. No revealed ground of righteousness through which grace might reign. Thus we see that law, whatever is mixed with it, is still but law. The least tincture of law mars the character of grace, dulls the glory of God, and deprives the soul of joy and blessing. But that was God's appointed way of showing Israel their sin. Moses wrote the law upon the second tables of stone. Consider the following. And the Lord said unto Moses, Hew thee two tables of stone like unto the first, and I will write upon these tables the words that were in the first tables which thou breakest. Exodus 34:1. And the Lord said unto Moses, Write thou these words, for after the tenor of these words I have made a covenant with thee and with Israel. And he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He did neither eat bread nor drink water, and he wrote upon the tables the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. Words. Exodus 34:27-28. The Lord had written the first purely legal covenant, and no glory was reflected in Moses' face. But now Moses' face is seen to shine, although he veils the glory while speaking to the people. By his action, he outwardly manifests the effect of even a mixture of law and grace. In a measure, it hides the goodness of God from man and thus veils his glory. Israel could not see. The veil of unbelief was upon their hearts. For the nation of Israel, this veil of unbelief will be removed when they turn to the Lord. 2 Corinthians 3:16. For the law will then have served its purpose and convinced them of their need of a Savior, and His grace will then be seen by Israel. According to the pattern which God has given him, Moses put those tables of stone upon which he had written the Ten Commandments into the ark. That ark was Christ in type, and the law of God was within his heart. He magnified and made it honorable by his subjection to its every requirement, both inwardly and outwardly. Isaiah 42:21. As it is written of him, I delight to do thy will, O my God. Yea, thy law is within my heart. Psalm 40, verse 8. He took upon himself all of man's responsibility as to God's broken law. The ark with its blood-stained mercy seat was all that saved Israel from the consuming fire of God's judgment. It alone was the basis of his continuing to dwell among that rebellious people. Of course, this which we have just been considering is only the shadow. Christ is the substance. The lesson which the shadow teaches, and which we would emphasize, is that only on the basis of his atoning work can God dwell among us. Christ, not the law, is our salvation. Christ's righteousness, not our own supposed righteousness, is our covering. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believeth. Romans 10:4. Christ is our life. Colossians 3:4. Thou shalt see my back parts, but my face shall not be seen. As was said, man under law cannot see the face of God. When saints attempt to keep the law, his face is turned away. They only see the shadowy, distant, august presence of Jehovah. To believers, the law is behind God's back. The law justified God by condemning the sinner, but Christ ended that condemnation by taking it upon himself and dying in the sinner's place. Hence, the law has been silenced forever. Having done its work and fulfilled its office, the law steps down and out and makes way for the grace of God. Through our tears. There are songs that we sing when we're happy and songs that we breathe when we're gay. Oft we sing when it seems heaven's sunshine is flooding our pilgrim way. There are songs that we sing in the shadow when our hearts are filled with fears. But the songs that are richest and dearest are the songs that we breathe through our tears. It is easy to sing in the noontide when everything seems to go right and there's really no sacrifice needed, to sing when the skies are all bright. But when in the midst of our sorrow we sing with the voice of good cheer, we are making the true heavenly music in the songs that we breathe with a tear. Some may think songs are only for gladness, others think they are only for mirth, but the song from the heart bent in anguish has a millionfold greater worth. Let me sing when my heart's beating blithely, let me sing when my way is most drear, for I know that the music is sweetest in the songs that I breathe with a tear. Clarence Simeon Way.